Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Health. Our topic today is the association between obesity and diabetes and effective strategies for treating both conditions. I'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program. I'd also like to thank Ethicon Endosurgery for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. Physicians and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME credit by registering online at discoveryhealthcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It's easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so log on today. Now, we're fortunate to have a distinguished group of experts here in the studio with us to discuss the connection between weight loss and diabetes control. Dr. Philip Schauer, director of the Bariatric and Metabolic Institute, Cleveland Clinic Foundation, professor of surgery at Cleveland Clinic Lerner College of Medicine. Dr. Christopher D. Still, director of the Center for Nutrition and Weight Management, Geisinger Health System, adjunct clinical associate professor of nutrition, Pennsylvania State University. And Dr. Robin Blackstone, medical director, Scottsdale Bariatric Center, clinical associate professor of surgery, University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. During the next hour, we will explain the link between obesity and type 2 diabetes, describe the beneficial effects of weight loss on control of type 2 diabetes, differentiate among the types of bariatric surgery, including gastric bypass and banding. We'll review the research indicating that in selected patients, bariatric surgery brings significant improvement in or complete remission of type 2 diabetes, and we'll describe which patients are appropriate candidates for bariatric surgery. Now, diabetes and obesity seem to be ever increasing. What are the latest statistics for diabetes and obesity here in the United States, Dr. Still?
Well, in short, there's been a significant increase in both the epidemic of obesity and diabetes, but I think it may be helpful for us to first define obesity so we can tell exactly what we're talking about. In the last 15 or 20 years, we've used the body mass index. It's a very simple calculation. It's calculated by multiplying our patient's weight in pounds by 703, and then you divide that number by your height in inches twice. And that really correlates with morbidity and mortality. And over the last 20 years or so, there's been a significant increase in both individuals that are overweight and obese. And in fact, up until 1980, the prevalence of individuals that were obese were about 15%, and the amount of individuals that were overweight were about 47%. Unfortunately, last year, some 70% of the U.S. population were overweight, and 34%, or over a third of the U.S. population, were obese. So, and we all know as we increase in our body mass index, so does the rate of comorbid medical problems, such as blood pressure, cholesterol, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes.
So similar to the way that we've defined obesity very carefully, we need to make sure that we define diabetes carefully. And a person who has diabetes is diagnosed by defining a fasting plasma glucose or fasting blood glucose of 126 or greater on two different occasions. Or they can have a random glucose done, which is greater than 200. Now, compare 1980 to 2005. You see that we've almost tripled the number of diabetics in the United States. About 15.8 million people in 2005 carried that diagnosis. But that's the tip of the iceberg. The group of people who have prediabetes or insulin resistance, which means their blood sugars range from 100 to 124, that range, they actually are 58 million people. So that's really where the big problem, the big epidemic, is going to come from in the future.
Dr. Schauer, does obesity cause diabetes?
Well, now, Rhea, although not all people who are obese are diabetic, there is a very strong correlation. In fact, if you look at a graphing, comparing body mass index with risk of type 2 diabetes, as you go up and exceed 25, up to 30, there becomes an exponential increase in the incidence of type 2 diabetes. So this association is so tight that many investigators would say that obesity is a etiologic factor. It is probably a causative factor for type 2 diabetes. So much so that this term diabesity actually is cropping into the medical literature as well as the lay press. What appears to be driving the epidemic of diabetes, as Robin pointed out, is this epidemic of obesity. The obesity epidemic is pushing and driving diabetes sky high.
Dr. Still, what is the role of weight loss in controlling diabetes?
Diet and exercise has to be the mainstay, the cornerstone, if you will. I mean, the American Diabetes Association states that with obese and overweight diabetics, weight loss should be the first-line treatment. There's been some good studies done in diabetes care that just a 5% weight loss has been shown to increase insulin sensitivity, decrease diabetes medications, and improve blood glucose. And then there's been larger studies, the Finnish Diabetes Prevention Trial, and probably the most popular is the Diabetes Prevention Program, which looked at about 3,500 individuals, and they're randomized to either placebo, metformin, 850 milligrams twice a day, or just an intensive diet and exercise program. And after about 3 years, there was a statistically significant improvement in just the intensive weight loss and diet and exercise to reduce the incidence of diabetes over metformin and control.
In addition, you know, it's been shown that that intensive lifestyle intervention can actually treat diabetes. In the look-ahead trial, where over 5,000 type 2 diabetics were randomized to either intensive lifestyle intervention or just regular diabetes support and education, there was about a 35% increase in weight loss in the group with intensive lifestyle intervention. About 37% of people lost greater than 10% of their weight. And they also had a remarkable decrease in the number of medications that they were using to treat high glucose levels. So that shows you that intervention can be very effective.
Well, along with glycemic control, are there other benefits to weight loss, specifically in people with diabetes?
Well, I think as Chris pointed out to earlier, glycemic control is certainly important, but also controlling blood pressure as well as triglycerides and cholesterol, critically important. And fortunately, weight loss improves all three of those factors.
Well, to help illustrate the challenges and the effects of weight loss for obesity-related diabetes, we have some patient cases. We'll begin with Nicole, a young mother who is a patient of Dr. Still's, who developed obesity-related diabetes in Paxinus, Pennsylvania. Nicole changed her lifestyle to combat the disease.
I'm going to go ahead and check your eyes and bright light. I decided to go into nursing because I liked helping people. It's something I've always wanted to do growing up. Seeing the smile on a patient's face after you've helped them do something, it just makes it worth it in the end. My weight first became an issue with my first pregnancy. Before I got pregnant, I exercised and walked a lot. I was in college and me and a few friends would go running. I ate whatever I wanted, and I only weighed about 130. Once I got pregnant, I kind of stopped exercising. The baby took up so much time. I was still in college and I was working, and I just didn't have the extra time to exercise anymore, and just kind of went downhill from there. During my second pregnancy, I put on another 30 pounds. After the pregnancy, to try to lose the weight, I did workout tapes at home and did some walking. I was able to lose 20 pounds on my own, but that stayed about 180 when I got pregnant again for the third time. And I had gained another 30 pounds, taking me up to 220 pounds at my final appointment with my third pregnancy. That's when I had found out I had gestational diabetes. They had said the gestational diabetes, it just goes away after they have the baby. After my third pregnancy, I found out I had diabetes. I I was devastated. I was crying. I couldn't believe that I'd have to take medication. I felt like I was too young to have diabetes already. I couldn't believe that I would have to take my blood sugar daily and watch what I ate. I watched my grandmother go through it, and she would have to eat the sugar-free candies. And I'm like, I am 27. If I want a piece of cake, I want to be able to eat a piece of cake. I was put on a medication that I had to take twice a day. I started on the diet program, and it felt like I was never going to get there. Every time I got on the scale, probably the first 2-3 months, I think I lost maybe 2 pounds. But once I started exercising and watching what I ate and listening to what they said and started to actually apply it to my life, it just worked, and it started just coming off so easy. It just seemed like, you know, I could have done this all along. And then I lost. We've had to change everything about our life. We changed the food in our house. We changed the way we, you know, exercise as a family, and before, we didn't do that. I walk a lot at the hospital where I work, at Geisinger. I walk in from the parking lot. I'm walking almost a half mile just till I get to where I work. I make sure I take the steps, and instead of trying to use the elevator, I take the steps more often. If I get free time at the hospital, I'll walk around trying to get as much exercise as possible. After I had lost probably about 30 pounds, my blood sugar was within a normal range of where it should have been, and I was able to come off the medication. I lost 41 pounds, and I'm still losing. I was ecstatic. I just felt like, finally, I'm free of that medication.
Dr. Still, is Nicole's story, her success, typical?
It's not atypical. I mean, we know that with a modest weight loss, and she lost a great over 10% of her presenting weight. The hard part is, over time, is maintaining that weight. But I think she has really made some lifestyle changes in her diet, and most importantly, in her physical activity, to make it into a daily routine for her, so hopefully she'll be able to adhere to that. So many times we set patients up to fail with very unrealistic expectations for weight loss, but I think Nicole lost a significant amount of weight, improved her medical problems, and now she's working on maintaining that.
You know, although some patients can and do succeed on their own with lifestyle change, I think it's important for us to recognize as physicians that most patients do not on their own. You know, there are several factors that have been identified as factors that differentiate successful patients with those who are not. And a very nice study by Jim Hill and Rena Wing showed that patients that have a regular, consistent exercise program or exercising 150 minutes per week, as well as keeping a log of their activity and their dietary intake, those are the type of patients that seem to be able to keep the weight off long term.
Some of the things that I think she incorporated too, like walking into work, parking a little farther away, she's really trying to make those behavior changes a part of her lifestyle. And that's probably a key to her long-term success.